Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome. Good morning, everybody, and welcome again to Revolutionize Your Love Life. This morning, I'm talking to Katrine Doorkoop. She is a love and divorce coach. She's a delightful woman in her own right. We first met in London a couple of years ago when Catherine Woodward Thomas was doing a tour, and we had a lovely time together, and I gave Katrine some gloves, which she still has, and we're still warming each other today. Welcome, welcome, Katrine.
Thank you, Heather.
You're very welcome. So first of all, a little introduction, Katrine.
Yes, sounds good.
Yeah. You lived as an expat in Poland, I understand, Sweden, Singapore, Germany, UK, and now in Belgium. And she's had a diverse career before she worked in hotel and tourism, career coaching, human resources training, and organizational development. She's got a lot of qualifications and coaching certifications. But today we're going to explore the wisdom of the relationship wheel. So here she is. It's going to be a great show. So Katrine, first of all, tell us a little bit about what's led you to become a love and divorce coach.
Thank you, Heather. That was a lovely introduction. And I'm delighted to be here with you on the show. Yeah, my personal story is that I separated a few years ago. We were together for 5 years. And at the time of the separation, when it all happened, I was the one that had to move out. And well, in a nutshell, I was a mess emotionally. I felt very alone, sad, lost, exhausted. And I did not know who to turn to, as I did not want to bother my friends with my sadness. And one day I was on the internet searching for, I can't even remember what, but somehow by coincidence, magic, you might call it, I came across a process called conscious uncoupling, and I hired a coach to help me to move through my personal grief. And this program helped me to shift my perspective on life and love, to heal my heart, and most importantly, to connect back to my very own essence again.
Oh, Katrine, I'm so glad that you had such a really good way to come through, and so sad that you had such a painful breakup. But I know now you're in a new relationship. You've called in your one, which is delightful to see. And I know that that's thriving and healthy for you. Such a different picture. So can you tell us a little bit about what people face in their relationships, what challenges that drew you towards looking at things in terms of the relationship wheel?
Yes. Well, what I see with my clients is how they struggle with not knowing how to navigate conflict or moments of disconnection, not knowing how to communicate about their feelings and needs, about what's going on for them. And what happens is either suppress their feelings or they express them in a very strong way. And over time, their partner pulls away from them. And relationship gets undermined, trust is lost because of constant tension and walking on eggshells.
Yeah, I really relate to that. I see that in lots of my clients. They speak about that sort of thing. And also I experienced it myself in my 18-year marriage. That's exactly how things went, you know, way before I had the relationship skills that I've had now. I'm really interested in this concept of the relationship wheel because I think it really throws light on what can happen and how you can stop it, in a sense, just by being able to predict where you are and know where you are. So can you tell us a bit about what happens at each stage We'll see how many we get through today, because it's quite meaty stuff and I don't want to rush through.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe you could grab a pen and paper if you have it nearby. And if you don't, that's also fine. You can just imagine it in front of your mind's eye. Imagine a circle with five sections, like a clock. So we start at 12. 12 to 2 p.m., it's the honeymoon stage. From 2 to 5 p.m., you have power struggle. From 5 to 7, it's decision time. From 7 to 9, it's the phase of recommitment. And from 9 to 12, you will be in the phase of conscious relating.
Could you tell us a little bit first then about the honeymoon stage that we love so much? It's just such a beautiful state to be in. However, this has to come to an end, but let's see. You can tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, well, most of us know too well about the romantic love stage, right? This is when we fall in love and when we feel euphoric and excited and full of ecstasy and we feel orgasmic and yeah, we are on a high. We want to play more and work less, and we have a tendency to spend money that we don't have, and we call each other many times throughout the day, and we send each other messages. So in this phase, connection is the prime objective, and everything else seems so much less significant. Well, don't forget or be aware that this is also a bit of an altered state of consciousness. Yeah. In this stage of love, we enter a state of denial because we deny all the negative things and we only see what's positive about our partner, right? Now, our friends might say things like, don't you think she drinks a bit too much? Or isn't he a bit too controlling? Or, well, he sure is mean to you. But we are making excuses because we don't want to look at those parts in that phase. We're oblivious. Oh no, he's had a hard week. Oh no, she's just having a rough day.
Yes, I see that too. Yeah, these are things that in calling in the one we call red flags, the things that you don't actually notice. You don't want to notice. There's a big phase of idealization where you just want to see the perfect person, the answer to all your prayers. And there's a real resistance to allowing that state to disintegrate or be questioned. Yeah. And I think you say, you know, we are actually drugged by a state of endorphins and adrenaline.
Yes. And eventually the drug wears off.
And from our eyes.
That's when the trouble sometimes starts, because many of us don't have the tools. We don't know how to navigate when difficulties happen. When there is tension, we feel triggered, we retract. We don't know how to navigate so well these moments of disconnection. But what you need to know is that actually in this honeymoon phase, little or no healing or growth is likely to happen within a relationship, yeah, because we are a little bit in that intoxicated state. And well, our culture glorifies this honeymoon stage. Well, we've become addicted to love. And I see many of my clients jump from one romantic love relationship to the next, disillusioned when the romance ends. And then they begin the new search for the new romantic high, and they're just stuck in that circle.
Yeah, there's the illusion that that is true love and anything else isn't.
Indeed.
I think it's Roald Dahl. He wrote sort of rhymes for children and fairy stories with different paths in them. You know, in his story, the Red Riding Hood had a pistol in her knickers and shot the wolf. And then they got married and lived happily ever after. And then their troubles really began. And I think that's much more realistic. But we may be painting a gloomy picture. For me, at that point, when the scales fall from our eyes and we see the person as they really are, then we can really evaluate whether we want to be with them or not. And also we begin to see in reflection how we're treating ourselves. They will show us by how they treat us, how we treat ourselves. They mirror that back. That is an amazing piece of growth.
And if you can grow through stages together, these stages you're going to describe, the potential for having a really much deeper, richer relationship is amazing. Go on, I'll let you carry on and describe it all.
Yes, there is a lot of potential in this wheel. Knowing the different stages and what happens in each stage and how you can show up and move through each stage with a sense of grace, it can become a beautiful journey. But let's move on to the next stage, which is the power struggle. Yeah, remember, 2 to 5 p.m. Now, this is when the drug starts wearing off and the second stage begins. Now, what's happening is that there is a tendency to negate the positives and see mainly the negatives. And the very traits of our partner that caused us to fall for them in the first place will likely begin to drive us crazy in this power struggle phase. So imagine someone you might have originally admired for his calmness, stability, groundedness during the romantic love phase might suddenly feel boring to you. Or if you were attracted to that lively, outgoing woman you met at the Rainbow Dance Club, you may be feeling suddenly embarrassed by how loud and pushy she seems. Now, you see, the initial excitement has flip-flopped into frustration and often despair. Our triggers and buttons are being pushed, and issues that we overlooked in the romantic love stage become frighteningly apparent. It's like walking on a piece of land that is filled with mines.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I think there's something at that point as well. It's like, you know, we're going to go to the deeper stuff, but I think there's also that sense of, I think what Ken Page calls the wave. You know, are these qualities really things that I could tolerate for life? And what are the assets and what are the deficits? And again, what's reflected from me? What work do I need to do to make this relationship happen properly? Awesomely.
Beautifully said, Heather. Yes, indeed. Now, how do you move through this? So what you need to do is to locate these so-called landmines, the triggers, and to disarm them. But in order to locate them, you generally and most probably will trip over them first.
Yeah. Might be worth thinking where they came from just at this point. Because we know when people break up, they get really broken right back to their core and to the things that happened in childhood that were the initial fractures in connection that we then started to make our decisions about ourselves and relationships from. So I think, you know, people who've listened to my podcasts know that I was a hospitalized child and my decisions started to come from there, about how to manage on my own when nobody else was there and really feeling that my needs were a nuisance. So going into relationships, anticipating that I would continue to be alone and my feelings and needs would be a nuisance. Not a very positive way to go into it, but I'm realizing more and more how this has colored things in the past. And that is a real minefield for me. You know, when the going gets tough, I have a tendency to go and be on my own. Okay, then that's it. I'll go and be on my own, which is not necessarily very helpful. So I can climb myself down from that tree now and really get into the thick of things and deal with things together.
Yes. Yes. It's like you say that many of our reactions and the way we show up today are these patterns that were planted many years ago in our childhood and are a result of unmet needs and childhood wounds. That's what it boils down to.
Yes, let's just think about what else other people might think. You know, I've got the I am alone, I don't matter. Sometimes people have had crises in their family homes have ended up feeling I am alone. Or people who've moved house a lot can feel that they don't belong because they don't belong in the communities they're sort of plonked down into as the family moves.
Yes, or I'm not worthy. Mm-hmm. I'm not valuable. It's usually what shows up for people who have not received enough of appreciation and support from their parents at the time because the parents were busy or in jobs or careers and
Yeah, that lack of recognition. And it can be small things that make a difference. Just we don't want to blame our parents because they were all people of their generations who generally tried to do the best with what they had and the knowledge that was around at the time. You know, there are some parents who were abusive, and that may well predispose us to be in abusive relationships now. But fortunately, those are in the relative minority. But I should just say, if you are in an abusive relationship and listening to this, please do listen to the three on power and control relationships, the three podcasts on that, which will help. But generally, we're looking at parents who probably didn't know quite how to bring up a child, how to connect emotionally. And yeah, how many people will say to me, oh, I had a really happy childhood. And then they say, yes, but I was left for 2 years with foster parents because my parents' situation was really difficult for them. But I managed that fine, you know, not recognizing the magnitude. Or when my little brother was born, I was sent away to stay with an auntie that I really didn't like. So not recognizing that that's a fracture, and that you may well have drawn a conclusion from that about yourself and others and life. All of those things are simple ways that we can be coloured by events. So, you know, probably for me, I was coloured blue. So, you know, it went to the depressive side. But other people may be coloured red and be angry and, you know, over-adapted.
Yes, things can show up in different forms and shapes and emotions on different levels.
Yeah.
And it's not always so easy to see that, what is happening when you are right inside of a situation. Now, there's two more things that you would want to know about the power struggle. Number one is that many couples adapt by living what is called a parallel relationship. On the surface, these relationships may appear non-conflictual. Everything is peaceful. And this happens sometimes to couples that are in long-term relationships, but are rarely connecting at a deeper level. The couple has kind of adapted with an I do my thing, you do your thing attitude. It's like an unspoken agreement, let's not stir the pot. And they may live in the same house and sleep in the same bed, but true connection rarely occurs. And their communication is generally limited to the essentials and logistics of day-to-day living. Problems are not addressed, so conflict is avoided. So it's an avoidance strategy. You are in the power struggle phase, but you are avoiding making it explicit.
So there's never any confrontation. Issues never get addressed. You sort of carry on as if nothing's happening.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of people might think, oh, we don't have a power struggle, but it's kind of, it's below the surface.
Yes, it's a refusal to actually engage.
Yes.
So what's the second one?
Yeah, the second one is the opposite, and that is what we call the hot relationship, hot. Yeah, it's an endless cycle of explosive fighting and reconciling. And these relationships are usually very intense, both in conflict and in the passion of reconciliation. That's what many people are also in this vicious circle, fighting and then having great, what is called makeup sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unconsciously, interestingly, one or both partners may be picking fights so that the reconnecting energy will occur. So then they have a momentary closeness, but at a deeper level, this intimacy proves an illusion because it's part of the cycle.
Yeah, that's sort of painful, really, because, well, if we look back again, you know, with my psychotherapy hat on, if we look at the roots of that pattern, it's a drama pattern and it's a trauma pattern. So you're trying to get something of the quality you may have had with a child. If you had a shouty mother or an angry father, then that to you will have become your blueprint for communication. So you'll really get stuck into that side of things. And connection only feels like there's love there if there's also anger there. And obviously that's not ideal in terms of richness and love in relationships and creating security and commitment. It's a roller coaster. And it can have consequences in all sorts of ways, you know, to your well-being and, you know, even the structure of your life, how well you do at work, how well you do financially. That's a very sort of broad affecting issue. So you're going to tell us a little bit about how we can adapt to move through and different things that you've thought of around these two issues. So you're going to take us through a third adaptation.
Yes. One way actually to adapt to the power struggle is to end the relationship, as sad as that may sound. What I've witnessed is that many couples go through years of ongoing low-level conflict, pain and distance, which they never address on a conscious level. And this ongoing negative energy creates a lot of defensiveness, which creates further separation instead of deeper connection. And yeah, over time, this is just undermining the basic foundations that the relationship initially was built on. And usually one partner reaches a certain threshold and decides to step out of this relationship.
Yeah, and that's a very sad way to go. But if you feel like there is nothing to be retrieved, the relationship has died, then really you're better out of it, because it's a living death for you. Yeah, and so many people will tolerate stuff for so long. And they'll try and make things better by degree, you know, if I keep trying, she'll change. But if they won't, and if they can't adapt together, then it's a deadening experience. So we're going to come back to this a bit more. Perhaps we'll do a second podcast, which goes from the decision stage, which we'll probably call breakup or breakthrough, something like that, next time. But let's stop here for now. Sorry to stop on a low note, but actually, I think maybe it isn't, you know, stepping up for your future, if it means stepping out of your relationship, is a real growth point as well, because you finally feel what's good for you and what is effectively a prison or a ball and chain that you can be released from. And hopefully by conscious uncoupling, you can learn what issues got you into that sort of relationship in the first place and learn new skills to make sure that you never, ever go there again. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.